You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 65. We've got a post-All-Star break show here with a lot of actionable advice, looking at strength of schedule, different matchups to exploit, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Steve, how was the All-Star break? Did you catch any of it? Talk to me about the Derby. How are we doing over there?
Yeah, it was good. Better than I thought. The Derby, ever since they switched to the bracket and time limit format, has just been a home run for your bad pun of the show. It's really been great. I know we jump on MLB for doing seemingly everything sort of wrong, but they really nailed this home run derby format. It's been great. Julio Rodriguez just put on an absolute show, even though he didn't even win. It seems like that's always the case, right? Like, remember Josh Hamilton at Yankee Stadium?
Yeah. Who won that year? He like gave him the trophy at the end.
Was it Justin Morneau that won that year?
There's
always a guy that doesn't win that always puts on a performance, but it doesn't really matter. It was cool that, Alonso was going for the three-peat, but the Derby's been great. The All-Star game, I mean, they got to figure out a way to not make it a 3-2 game. I mean, it's so hard when you have, like, the best pitchers in the league just going out there for, like, their bullpen day and just going at 110%, right? Like, how is it not going to be a 3-2 game? Like, there needs to be something tweaked. I don't have the answer, but that's a whole other show that we could sort of tweak the All-Star game. But overall, it's pretty good, but I'm bored, man. Like, we were just talking before we were getting started. It was sluggish. I think it's because we're missing actual baseball games. But thankfully, there's only this one day off Wednesday, and then when the show comes out, there'll actually be games too. I think that's probably because of the condensed schedule with the lockout, right? Like, there's usually two or three days after that All-Star break game for off days, but it's kind of nice, this condensed schedule. There's less off days. I've noticed that for sure.
Yeah, we're jumping back in. I think it was an all-time low for me on the Phantom lineup check, where you like pull open the app and you're like, well, my guy's doing, and then you get depressed and you start getting the itch, because that's kind of how we roll. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't as painful as years past, so I agree with that, but ready to get back into action for sure. But thank you guys for joining us post-break. We're kind of on the home stretch here from strategy, tactics, gaining an advantage, and we appreciate you guys joining us from here through the end of the season, and then we continue on in the off-season as well. But you guys can follow us, if you don't already, on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified. Actually saw it today, Steve. I have 666 followers. So,
nice.
I think I might need one more to just get the juju right for second half. Steve is at Stav8818. And, of course, follow at PitcherListPods for all the awesome podcasts that come out on the main feed here. You guys can email us whenever, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. Happy to take any, personal lineup questions or conundrums that you're in and talk about them on the show. And of course, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you guys get your podcasts. Throw us a review, would be greatly appreciated. But Steve, housekeeping out of the way, we got a great topic here with matchups to target for second half. And this is a topic that's kind of near and dear to my heart. This is the second season we've looked into this. What are your thoughts about kind of this, I don't know if we're going to call it like 75% of the way through fantasy seasons. I know it kind of depends on format, but it's that time of year where you're looking for any edge, and looking at opponents is one extra thing you can kind of consider. But what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, man, you're always on top of this, and I got to give you a credit. Like, it's something that I think is underlooked, I guess, to make up a word, or it's not paid enough attention to speak English there, especially in season, because, right, like, we now have this sample of games, like, 55% of the season, whatever it is, and we know who to target, and we could do that longer term. I think the All-Star break is a great time to regroup and target these teams and that have, you know, okay, this team's facing a bunch of teams with bad pitching staffs in the second half, like that waiver wire, you know, it's a good tiebreaker for waiver wire ads, for trades, and it can be more than that, because you know a team that plays Oakland 9 times is going to have an advantage over the team that plays, you know, in the NL East, where it's a dogfight with everyone in that division, right? So, you know, props to you. You're always on top of this. And, you know, we did a nice little deep dive here. We got a little granular, looked at not only the teams that have been bad on the year as far as offense and pitching-wise, but also the last 30 days. So you can get even more granular with that and see what's changed and who's gotten worse, right? Like, you know, the Angels, when they started off 21-19 or you know, 25-19 are a lot different than when they're now like 30-50, right? Like, things change, and the 30 days might be a little more reflective. And if they cross over, I think, could be even more helpful, right? Like, if they are bad and then worse recently, it's something to even take advantage of more. So, it's something that's not talked about enough. I know there's articles like who to start, who to sit, and strength of schedules and things like that, but it's an underutilized tool for fantasy purposes to look at actual matchups and not just the next 7 days, but for the whole season, because, you know, with division play, like, there can be a skew in the schedule, and some teams might have a lot easier route, and for fantasy purposes, it could be a huge advantage if you know where to place your eggs in what baskets.
Yeah, and it's a topic I mean, obviously, take too much credit for.
Yeah, it's all right. We didn't invent it. Yeah,
right. It's looking at schedules, but I think I recall 2 or 3 seasons ago when, because I enjoy listening to Fantasy Baseball Today over at CBS as well. Nice podcast. Shout out to Frank Stamfel, who was on the show. But prior to Frank, Adam Azer was the host. And I remember 1 year Azer dropped in like mid-July that I think it was like Mike Clevenger or the Indians. Somebody on the Indian staff, maybe it was Plesac or something. And he was talking about just the remaining matchups. And when you hear them one after another, and they're all just like great target matchups, to me, it's almost like, I think it goes beyond a tiebreaker. And the example that on the flip side of the coin that I come back to is like Zach Gallen, who prior to this season, you know, I had rostered him for every inning he had pitched. And I was super pumped about Gallen and bought in and everything. And then I like played out, you know, every fifth game for his starts. And it was like, at the Dodgers, at the Rockies, at the Dodgers, at the Padres. And I was like, man, this is like a gauntlet, for especially for like head-to-head playoff leagues where you really can't afford that, you know, that matchup where you're trying to protect ratios and you see like your SP4 is just like got a 2-star week against the Astros and the Yankees or something.
Like, we talk about it all the time, right? Like, oh, it's that was an obvious sit, right? Like, you know, your SP3 or 4 in Coors is a clear sit, right? Like, you're not going to start Alex Wood in Coors, but like, right, if you have a playoff matchup in a head-to-head league, like, what do you like? Volume. You sit them, but like that's such a huge factor, right? Like, especially head-to-head. Yeah,
you got to do it, you know, it's one thing. I think when you're in SP1 to SP5 mode, especially looking this far out, there's enough time where you can still kind of buy low or maybe, you know, give a little bit of a discount on an underperforming pitcher to try to acquire like a good run of matchups. But then when you get to like the back of your rotation, that's where it becomes even more important of like, you know, there are guys that go on runs. I mean, you know, the example, and I kind of was on the other side of this preseason, hindsight 2020, but if we remember Ranger Suarez last year, just was lights out with like a 0.5 ERA or something ridiculous over his last 10 starts. And those starts were Marlins, Cubs, like just a lineup of cushy matchups. And then, you know, it's not to put too much stock in it. And I don't mean to talk out of both sides of my mouth, but yes, there are times where Yusei Kikuchi will throw lights out against the Astros and you're like, whoa, I didn't expect that. And yes, there are times where Shane Bieber gets blown up by the Cubs. So you can't put, you know, everything into it. But when we walk through some of these teams on this show, because we're talking, Steve, about, you know, breaking down the weak hitting teams, the weak pitching teams, and then looking at potential targets, some of these are just glaring where you're like, holy smokes, man, you get the Oakland A's and the Royals for 4 out of 6 series. And that's the other thing, is not just looking at remaining games from now to the end of the season, but also the next 6 or 7 matchups. If you're in a team with a 6-team playoff and you're in 11th place, you might need to be looking now at some of those cushy matchups to, you know, you can't sit around and wait. You can't stash a young pitcher or somebody on the IL. You need results quickly. So even if it's like a Taylor Hearn, if you know that they're getting fantastic matchups, that can be worth being your SP7 and just getting you some innings and not exploding your ratios, hopefully. So, yeah, I think pretty self-explanatory, but wanted to give some background on the topic. Anything else to add, Steve, before we kind of jump in?
No, one quick thing. I know this wasn't our process for how we built this rundown, but a quick little cheat sheet. If you go to, on FanGraphs, the standings and then the standings app and then the 2022 projected standings, there's a lot of playoff odds and stuff and like projected win losses, but there's also a strength of schedule column that has the team's strength of schedule remaining. So like, you know, the Orioles, the remaining teams that they're facing have a combined winning percentage of 516, right? But it has that for every team. So a quick little cheat sheet, like if you just want to look at either pitchers or hitters, is you look at their remaining strength of schedule. You could sort by it and see who has, you know, the stronger schedules remaining and the weak ones. And like things that are glaring are like the White Sox have a remaining 470 strength of schedule. You know, the Cardinals have a 482 remaining strength of schedule. So like, it's just a barometer to say like, hey, these teams are playing mostly bad teams. So it's a quick little cheat sheet. If you're, you know, doing that sort of tiebreaker, deciding who to pick up, you know, for like a longer term ad or throwing in a trade or something, it's just another quick little thing you can check. That's a nice tool over there at FanGraphs to see who's got more or less better matchups than other teams going forward.
Yeah, that's a great note. We can link that up in the show notes as well, just so people can get there easier. Probably a nice little thing for some futures bets as well, Steve, if that's your cup of tea. You got any? I don't have anything placed this season. Usually I get on some player over-unders for like the full season props, but action.
I have so many. I just put in, like, right before the season started, I just put in a bunch of futures bets, you know, like rookie of the year, home run leaders, Cy Youngs. I definitely have a McClanahan Cy Young, which I'm hoping will cash.
Okay, but we'll humor see. Humor me real quick, because my buddy reached out to me for advice on this one. He bought in on a NL Rookie of the Year, Michael Harris, right out of the gate. And it was like 50 to win 4,000 or something ridiculous. And now they're trying to do the cash out for like a grand. And I looked at it and I was like, man, like you got Spencer Strider and then Michael Harris. And then after that, it's like O'Neill Cruz, Seiya Suzuki, Nolan Gorman. And I was like, there's so much baseball to be played. I feel like Harris, it feels like it should be a cash. But then I look at the rest of the list and I'm like, dude, he's rock solid. All the underlying numbers, Acuna should get hotter and he's hitting right behind him. I didn't know how to advise on that one, to take a little quick detour.
Yeah. I don't know. Who's the odds-on favorite right now? Is it Strider?
Strider is like a plus 170. Harris is a plus 200.
I would think so. And I'm still... I would still lean that way. It'd be hard for me to talk you out of cashing that. But I mean, Harris, the odds aren't that far behind. He's plus 210. Uh-huh. That's crazy.
And if Strider got hurt or something, anyway.
If they start to limit his innings, you know, they don't like limit the innings for a position player or anything like that. So that's something to consider too. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, Harris had a 3 stolen base game the other day. It's just insane what he's doing. He is supremely talented, skipping from double A. It's crazy.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
How good he's been.
So much fun to watch that lefty swing. Can't get enough of it. All right. So yeah, detour over. Steve, why don't you start us off, by talking about the weakest hitting teams, that we've seen this season, and then maybe I can go through the past 30 days here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be surprising. Like how I came up with this list is I just went to FanGraphs, went to teams and team statistics, and sorted by WRC+, and did it in reverse. And the list of teams are not going to be surprising. From worst to 10th worst, it's Oakland, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Arizona, Colorado, Angels, Royals, Nationals, Baltimore. So teams that are bad are also bad at hitting. To have some breaking news mm-hmm. there.
The only one that jumps out is like the Angels because you just think of Ohtani and Trout, but then the rest of that lineup, it's just like, oof.
I mean, having a lot of shares of Ohtani, I've watched a lot of Angels games, and just liking Ohtani and Trout in general, I watch a lot of Angels games. Also, having a kid, I watch a lot of West Coast baseball games. Yeah. The bottom half of that lineup is just so, so bad. Like, they claim Jonathan VR, and he's their everyday leadoff hitter. That's how bad it is. It's just laughably bad. Like, they have absolutely no chance other than Trout and Ohtani. Like, it's insane. Like, that one game versus the Royals, like, Ohtani hit two 3-run homers and, you know, had, like, 8 RBIs, and, like, they still lost. Like, it was insane. And then the next day they won because he went out and threw, like, 7 shutout innings, but they basically only win when he pitches. So that just goes to show how bad it is there. And, like, I know, like, the baseball world is – caught up in Soto rumors now because doesn't look like they're going to get a deal done. Now they're mm-hmm. looking to trade him. But Ohtani's a free agent after 2024, and I think that might be the next big name that's going to get talked about as far as, like, you know, he wants to go and win, and the Angels just can't get out of their own way, and Artie Moreno's one of the worst owners in sports. So I'm wondering how far away, if we're like a calendar year away from that sort of noise. But sorry, that's another detour.
Yeah, yeah.
The Angels are bad.
And they've, to segue here, they've been the worst team by WRC Plus over the last 30 days. Behind them is Oakland. Then you got the Marlins, the Reds, the Phillies, kind of post-Bryce Harper, despite Schwarber kind of carrying the weight there. The Nationals, the Padres need Tatis Jr. back more than ever. They're on this list of kind of bottom 6-7 teams in the past 30 days. And then the Tigers, the Pirates, and the D-backs. So, again, kind of your usual suspects.
The Phillies are really surprising for me there. That's kind of a one that jumps off the page to me. I don't know.
Yeah, Castellanos is really just not figured out.
And without Harper... And as hot as Schwarber gets, like, if you look at his, like, last 7 days, it's, like, an 80% strikeout rate. So, like, you know,
that comes and goes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We talked about Real Muto's kind of, you know, lackluster. So, I know. You're right, though. With that ballpark, and you just kind of chalk up the Phillies as, like, a bat-heavy team and Derek Hall and all that stuff. But, Yeah, a lot of volatility there, a lot of strikeouts in that lineup. So let's jump, Steve, to basically make that actionable. So as we've talked about the worst hitting teams, let's talk about some pitching that we can target based on that. And to start, the Texas Rangers is a team that we mentioned just a minute ago with Taylor Hearn. But they have, in the remaining schedule, 9 games against Oakland, 8 against the Angels, 3 against the Tigers. Now, their upcoming matchups are the Athletics, the Mariners, the Angels, the Orioles, the White Sox, Houston, and then the Mariners. So the Mariners, I know they're coming in 14-game winning streak into All-Star break. They're still not quite a lineup to me, and maybe it's just foolish on my part that I'm like, you know, I'm not petrified when I have a pitcher going up against the Mariners. Maybe I should be, Steve. I mean, Julio Rodriguez, Carlos Santana has been much better joining the team, and they've got, you know, Winker could still be coming around. But overall, when I look at this and it's like Athletics, Mariners, Angels, Orioles, the White Sox have been struggling. You got to expect they'll turn it around a little bit, but overall, the 9 games against the A's is really what you're targeting here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And your boy Suarez on the Mariners has been better too, as far as power and just an overall bounce back season. But the problem with the Rangers is that the pitchers that you would stream are just not good.
Right. Like,
outside of Martin Perez, like, there's really not much. And John Gray, obviously.
Gray,
John Gray's been great. But the guys that are available that you would go after. So for trade purposes, sure. You know, maybe someone's not believing in Martin Perez and they want to sell high or cash in and saw what happened in the second half last year with him. But maybe there's a much more cushier landing for him this year that could steer you towards targeting him. Same with Gray. Could be a similar sort of sell high attitude. But as far as the streaming options, it's like Glenn Otto, Spencer Howard. Like, Glenn Otto in 61 2/3 innings this year has a 17.4% strikeout rate and a 12.6% walk rate. Like, it does not get much worse than that. Like, his ERA is at 5.40, and the underlyings are basically agreeing with all of that. So it's not been good. Spencer Howard, I've always been a fan. I love that changeup coming up. I'm a sucker for Spencer Howard. I even streamed him against the A's last week, and it wasn't that bad. It was like 6 innings, but there was only like 1 strikeout and like 2 runs. But I would start Howard basically against those 3 matchups that you talked about: Oakland, LA, and Detroit. So hard to find like a long-term stream, like a long-term hold there.
Yeah.
But you know, Howard in those matchups, I'd be interested. He was a lot better in AAA this year, a 30% strikeout rate and a 9.7% walk rate. So a nice bounce back after what was a pretty disastrous tenure with Philly, both in the minors and at the major league level in 2021.
So keep an eye on Howard. If he puts together a good start or two, then there's going to be additional matchups against the A's as you get like deeper into August and everything. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's kind of a waste of a good pitching strength of schedule from here on in. Now, Houston, on the other hand, it's kind of a problem on the other side where most pitchers in the rotation for Houston are already rostered almost universally, but there might be a little opportunity here, Steve, and the matchups are very favorable. They have 9 games left against Oakland, 3 against the Tigers, 6 against the Angels. So similar division matchups like the Rangers. The upcoming games are, they'll have 1 against the Yankees tomorrow as you guys are listening to this. And then they got the Mariners, the A's, the Mariners, the Red Sox, and then Cleveland, Texas, and Oakland. So kind of a nice back half of that. And I guess it's worth noting as well that they also have 8 games against the Rangers. That's not the best offense in the league. So what are your thoughts on the Astros, Steve? Any any streamers or anything that really jumps off the page here from the Astros side?
Odorizzi has been available. I recently picked him up in a 14-team league. Two 14-team leagues, actually. So I like that. I know there's going to be even more of a rotation crunch. They're doing the six-man now. But when McCullers comes back, I guess that's can be more of an if rather than a when, even though McCullers is out on a rehab assignment, I think, this weekend. But Odorizzi also isn't a model of health, too. But I don't know how they would move Javier back to the bullpen. He's got like 113 strikeouts and like 78 innings.
You can't.
Absolutely insane how good he's been. But I would definitely look to add those two and hold on to, you know, all Astros pitchers. I know they're probably going to want to give Verlander a little bit of a break. Who knows? Javier was in the bullpen. They could also skip him in a spot or two. I would be generally trying to buy all the Astros starters I could, and maybe the fact that there is some scare that there's a rotation crunch provides that buying opportunity. But, you know, the Astros have some of the best pitching and best pitching development and pitch coaching in the league, and then now couple that with one of the better schedules in the second half as far as the weak offenses that they're facing. Like, I love it. I'm glad that I have as many Astros starters as I do.
Yeah, and McCullers is probably going to have a handful, probably four minor league appearances to kind of build up. I do think McCullers would be a really savvy IL stash if you have the availability there. He's still just like 52% rostered in Yahoo leagues, whereas Odorizzi is kind of the one to go after in the meantime. Just 40% rostered. But yeah, I agree, Steve. There's some sneaky opportunity if they want to rest Javier for the playoffs or Verlander, or just for other injuries that might pop up. But yeah, that's, you know, 9 against Oakland, 8 against Texas, 6 against LA, Angels. I think that's definitely a good one to target. And then the last one is probably the biggest one, and it's the White Sox. So the Sox schedule from here is insane, with 3 matchups against the Athletics, 9 games against the Royals, 3 against the Diamondbacks, 10 games against the Tigers, 10 games against the Guardians, and 9 against the Twins, who I know is not quite on the list, but it's kind of an honorable mention there. And in terms of the upcoming games for the White Sox, Cleveland, they do have a couple at Coors, and then it goes Oakland, Kansas City, Texas, Kansas City, Texas, Kansas City, Detroit, and then one series against the Astros, and then Cleveland and the Orioles. So, I mean, I know not all of those are like total target matchups, but if that's how you're going into the playoffs with, you know, a Giolito and hoping for a bounce back, I would absolutely bet on that and bet on a buy low. I know we've talked about Giolito on the past few shows, but this one to me, Steve, seems like the pitching matchup to target rest of the season. What are your thoughts on the White Sox and any guys that you might be interested
in? Yeah, the White Sox have like the best remaining schedule. Speaking of futures bets, I think the White Sox are a nice bet to win the division, despite Tony La Russa being there and then being sort of a laughing stock and rumors of the clubhouse being lost and all that. But this schedule is just too nice to pass up on. I think they're going to make up some serious ground in the standings and have some good, you know, pitching results and offense too. I know we'll talk about that in a second, but all those teams also are pretty bad at pitching as well. So the White Sox in general is a nice rule of thumb. Go after some White Sox, both pitchers and hitters, for your stretch run matchups.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to check out Johnny Cueto here, Steve, because I know it's kind of a laugh when you say it, because just the age and how many times he's kind of like duped us, but just 47% rostered, and on the season across 74 innings, a 2.8 ERA and a 1.18 WHIP. It's looked really promising, you know, similar numbers over the past month. Not quite like a strikeout per inning, but he's been able to go deep into games, get some wins. He threw 8 innings against the Tigers. He's gone 6 in 3 games around that 8 inning performance. So he's kind of eaten up some volume. And with this matchup coming up, is Cueto somebody that you would be interested in kind of streaming from here on in?
Definitely. That is a great target. And it's sort of the perfect pitcher for like bad matchups, right? Like Cueto can get you a handful of strikeouts. Like, it's not going to be league winning or anything like that, but he's going to go deep into games. I think there's only been like one game where he didn't make it past the 5th inning, which is crazy for, you know, his age and just not being sort of what he was, and being just like this crafty veteran. But I'm going to expect a lot of wins, some quality starts, even because these offenses that he's facing are so bad. And, you know, you pretty much would start him basically everywhere except for Coors and versus the Astros. So, like, yep. He might not even line up against some of those teams, right? So this is a great, great, essentially free in a lot of leagues, back end streamer, is a guy that you just sort of hold on to and could be like a Vargas rule type thing, just the way the matchups play out. Be a great add, long term. Like, it's not just someone that you just stream, but those matchups, I could see holding him for basically essentially the whole second half.
Yeah, totally agree. And we will get to some of those White Sox hitting opportunities and talk about teams with the worst pitching and kind of how that influences matchups and targets. But first, we're going to take a quick ad break and we will be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so Steve, other side of the baseball here, talk us through some of the weak pitching teams from the spreadsheet, and then we'll get into some opportunities because of that.
Yeah, so sort of the same thing. I just used Sierra on the FanGraphs team leaderboard. Probably my favorite pitching indicator. I think it's, you know, one of the more accurate ones, and it's a little more intricate than FIP or just XFIP that uses some league average stuff. Mm-hmm. So on the season, some of the worst pitching staffs by Sierra are the Royals, Rockies, Diamondbacks, Nationals, A's, Pirates, Detroit, Cardinals, which is surprising, Cincinnati and Baltimore. So a lot of bad teams there. The biggest one was your Cardinals. I'm absolutely shocked, and that just goes to show that they need a starter at the deadline.
I've heard rumors that it's going to be Syndergaard, and I'm like, come on, man, this is a window here. Go out and get Montas.
They're still going to be on that list if that's their buy, unfortunately. But a lot. You know, it's crazy. I mean, not surprising, but it's pretty sad how many of these teams are also on the worst offense list. Right. There's just a lot of bad teams in baseball. But that's, again, another topic.
Yeah, and the ones in the past 30 days look pretty similar as well, with the Rockies being the worst. Then in order, the Tigers, the A's, the Diamondbacks, the Pirates, the Twins, and then Texas, the Royals, Boston, which isn't a huge surprise with, you know, some of the health issues. Just such a bummer with Sale and everything, and even Brian Bayo is, you know, not been what we were hoping for and getting optioned and all that stuff. So the Reds are the last one on the list as well. So that kind of rounds out that list. I think the only ones that really sneak in are Boston, Minnesota, and Texas.
Yeah, Texas. That's why there's no pitching. The pitching opportunity, they stink.
It's brutal. Yeah. So looking at how we can target these bad pitching staffs, we're going to talk through some hitters here. And the first one is the Angels. Talking about their offense in more of a optimistic light here, Steve. But they have 3 games against the Royals, 6 against the Tigers, 9 against the A's. Their upcoming series are Atlanta, Kansas City, Texas, Oakland, Seattle, Oakland again, Minnesota, Seattle, and Detroit. So, I mean, after you get past the Braves there, yeah. I know Seattle's got a little bit more in the bullpen and, you know, Gilbert and Ray and everything, but I'll take that upcoming matchup. And in terms of players here, I thought one that kind of jumped out was Luis Renjifo, who has eligibility all across the diamond. And Renjifo's kind of like got a little bit, I know you got to squint for A's outside of Trout and Ohtani, but in July, he's batting .315. Granted, that's across 56 plate appearances. But in general for Renjifo, he doesn't strike out that much, just a 18% strikeout rate. This guy could be kind of a stuff and things helper, like kind of a table setter. And you got to, again, get in the weeds a little bit to see how it could turn out for you. But he does have 5 homers, 3 steals. I don't think you're really signing up for more than just like kind of a hot batting average run, because he's, you know, he's got a little more spark than some of the other guys. And some of these matchups are so brutal. But that was like the only one I could pull out. The fact that he's batting anywhere from like 6th, they batted him leadoff. The past week is probably, or his past like 7 games, batting .438. Granted, it's super small sample size, but that was the only one that really jumped out at me. Is there anyone on the Angels you would look to kind of target beyond Renjifo?
They're like the Rangers of hitting, right? Like they have great matchups, but there's no one really to take advantage of. Like, sure, Trout and right. Ohtani. Maybe Taylor Ward. He's really cooled off since basically May, essentially. So okay, yeah. Maybe someone gives up on him and could be a decent trade target. But I really like the Renjifo call. He's started basically for the last month. He's played every game for them. His hard hit rate is up from last year. His launch angle is up, which is nice. It's nothing like amazing under the hood, but you know, a 254 XBA to back up his 259 average, it's not going to kill you, especially these days with how average is. So I like it. It's a sneaky good ad. Could be a little bit more than a good, you know, he could be a good MI in deeper leagues. And, you know, when he's running hot, could be an actual, you know, second baseman. I know he's probably got some nice eligibility there. He's played basically all around the diamond. Should have at least second base and shortstop in, like, Yahoo leagues.
Yeah, Yahoo, he has second, third, short, and outfield. So nice, if you've got a deep bench for offense, kind of plug him in on Sunday scratches and all that stuff. But yeah, I think Renjifo is the name there. Maybe keep an eye on Joe Adell since he's back in the outfield. But
Trout should be back, I guess, Saturday, hopefully. But who knows with what was a back tweak is now a rib injury. That's never good. But yeah. Adell, something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. So then back to the White Sox, as we were just talking about how they have kind of good pitchers to target with Cueto and everything. And like you said, Steve, a lot of the teams are on this same list. They got 3 games against the A's, 9 against the Royals, 3 against the Diamondbacks, 10 against the Tigers. And again, don't need to go through it all, but their upcoming matchups, they have the Royals, the Rangers in for 4 series in a row. And on either side of that is the A's and the Tigers. So really good run here. And keep in mind that the A's probably won't have Frankie Montas as well. So
yep, that's a great point.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on White Sox hitters? I mean, take your pick because it's buy low on everything for the dumpster fire that's been the White Sox. But where are you seeing hope on the hitter side?
Yeah, I mean, I would try to buy every White Sox hitter that I could. Eloy, like you have here, great buy low. I know there really hasn't been much, and there's been injury, and it's been seemingly like 2 years now of frustration with Eloy as far as injuries, and he just hasn't gotten hot like he was in 2019 and 2020, but he definitely still has the skill. So you could probably get him for 50 cents on the dollar, I would imagine. But I would also try to target, like, you know, Jose Abreu's like real life numbers are pretty good, but he's only got like 11 home runs. Louis Robert has been a lot better recently, but still is probably a bit disappointing on the whole, although that buy window is probably slam shut with his performance over the last few weeks. But you know, I would trade for Andrew Vaughn. I would, you know, target any White Sox hitters that I could, and you know, guys that are cheaper that you have listed here, Josh Harrison, AJ Pollock, I think are great calls that are probably on your wire, or could be had for very, very cheap, and you know, should be on the receiving end of a lot of offensive explosions for the White Sox. This schedule is just by far the best remaining schedule for pitchers and for hitters. So White Sox, bye. There's your rule of thumb.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not too long ago when Harrison was really kind of a valuable piece with, like, the Nationals. And, you know, he had in 2021, he batted .294 when he was with the Nats and an 800 OPS. And then he, you know, got moved to the A's, and it wasn't as productive. But, you know, we all know who Harrison is. And he's, again, kind of just like a stuff-and-things guy. Like, the slug's never too high, but it's kind of the same bucket as Renjifo. It's just these guys, when you look at the matchups that they have, and they have a strikeout rate of like 17%, you could see kind of a Stephen Kwan type of series where you're like, man, did he really have like seven hits over three games? I wish he was on my roster. Like, these are the ones very bottom of like a util or like a corner infield or something. Harrison similarly has second, third, short, and outfield eligibility in Yahoo, and he is completely free. Pollock has been dreadful, but we know that Pollock can go on insane runs, so that would be one where if he has like a big breakout game, I might be willing to roll the dice and just, you know, stream, see what happens with the matchups that are here. So yep, with you there on the White Sox. Talk about the Astros, Steve, because their bats, there's a lot more room for speculation than pitchers, which is kind of, you know, universally rostered. But they have a healthy schedule as well from a hitting standpoint. 10 games left against the A's. They got 8 games left against the Rangers. A nice series in there with the Tigers. And, yeah, this is one that you could probably find gold in the middle of a really good lineup, with really the one of the top two or three hitting matchups rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely agree. And it just, you know, when a good offense like Houston and like the White Sox have these matchups, like, that's where these guys are going to pad their numbers. It's going to come from a lot of these juicy matchups, and to have a backloaded schedule like this is such an advantage. You know, 10 games versus Oakland, like, my God, like, what is their record going to be in those games? Like, is Oakland going to win one or two? And like, the run differential going to be just like plus 80 in Houston's favor? Like, that's what it's shaping up to be, especially when Oakland does sell off whatever actual usable pieces they have left, Montas and whoever else is going to go. So, you know, to have 8 versus Texas too, I know they're not on the list, but they're not like world beaters or anything like that. They're in the middle of the road / bottom third of Sierra overall in the year. So I think it's a great call. Sure, you know, you're not going to be able to get Yordan Alvarez or anything like that for cheap or, you know, even at all. But there's some opportunities here, and I think you could definitely take advantage of some lesser rostered Houston hitters or some underperforming ones as of now.
Yeah, I think Yuli Gurriel is the one that kind of jumped out just because he's only 44% rostered in Yahoo League. So, you know, anything, you know, it's certainly available in 12 teams, probably available in like 14, 15 team leagues. And it's been lackluster in terms of like a season line for Gurriel, batting .238 with a .680 OPS, but the past month batting .284 with a .765 OPS. And you'll take that when when you're seeing all these matchups coming up, you could see Gurriel going on one of those patented runs, and he's still batting like fifth or sixth in that lineup. So I think Gurriel is a really good one. Again, it's another one that doesn't offer a ton in like pop and speed, but he'll chip in on homers, and the average could take off. And then the other one is maybe Kyle Tucker. I know the kind of the homer speed has looked really solid on the year, but the past month he's batting just .233. There might be some people who are still waiting on Tucker to come around. Sure, you'd have to give up quite a bit for him, but I mean, we could look back and say like post All-Star break, no one is better than Kyle Tucker. No one would be surprised, especially with this matchup. So I think that would be worthy of, you know, checking in with the manager, the Kyle Tucker manager, and seeing if they're interested in offloading him there. So those are a couple names. I don't know about, you know, beyond that, I think the Astros are probably going to be in the market for an outfielder with like Jake Myers and who else they got out there? Like Chaz McCormick still?
Jose Siri they run out there, yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like for the World Series type of push, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought somebody in there. But
I wonder if they bring up Pedro Leon, who's been absolutely on fire in the minors the last month or so. He got off to a really, really slow start. But on the year, it doesn't look great. Just .238, .378, .443, but it's a 109 WRC plus. He's got 11 homers, 7 stolen bases, and I'm trying to pull up his splits, but they don't have it for minors. But he's been better recently. He'll just have to take me on my word for it. He's 24, so there's really not much as far as like age development or anything that they want to keep him down. So maybe keep an eye out there if they do call him up and give him some run in the outfield.
Yeah, that's a good Twitter search. Love that. That could be the one that stands out over guys like, you know, Josh Harrison and stuff like that. The last one on the list was the St. Louis Cardinals. And like we said, they've got one of the best lineups or schedules ahead. Another good futures bet, like you're saying, Steve. The 11 games against the Reds looks very favorable. 9 games against the Pirates, although it's worth noting that 6 of those games are the final series of the season, a very long series against the Pirates. I think that was kind of the makeup from some of the lockout stuff, which seems like it was ages ago. And then they do have 6 against the Rockies as well. I believe 3 are at Coors, and then 3 after that are at Busch. But the honorable mention one, 7 games against the Nationals and 11 games against the Cubs. So plenty of games in there where you would expect the Cardinals to go off for 8-plus runs. So it definitely begs the question on a handful of names, Tyler O'Neill, Dylan Carlson, Brandon Donovan, even like Lars Nootbaard, Corey Dickerson, potentially. There's definitely potential for bats there. It's tough to make sense of who's going to emerge between like a Donovan, Nootbaard, and Dickerson. But I think Carlson has been someone who's been middling, and then Tyler O'Neill's been underperforming. So those are all just kind of names to keep in mind. And in terms of like their immediate upcoming matchups, it looks a little bit tougher before it's going to get better. So I think on this one, it's almost like set a calendar alert for August 15th and go buy up as many cards bats as you can, because They've got the Reds, then they got the Blue Jays, Nationals, Cubs. So those are some pretty good matchups there. Then they got the Yankees and at Coors, followed up by Milwaukee. So don't love the Brewers there with the Yankees, but after that, it's Rocky Road, and then it's Diamondbacks and Cubs. So there's still plenty in there, but, you know, some soft matchups, a trip to Coors where some of the bats could go off. But overall, what are your thoughts on Cardinals, Steve? Do any of those names kind of jump out at you? I know Yepes is on the IL. If he comes back, that could be another good name for someone who's kind of a post-hype breakout even this season. But your thoughts on Cardinal hitters to target?
Yeah, this is a schedule that rivals the White Sox. Like, it's White Sox and Cardinals as far as hitters go. And the two names that jump out to me are Tyler O'Neill and Dylan Carlson. O'Neill has been very disappointed. I have him in my home league. As soon as he started to get going, he was hurt with that hamstring. But before that, he did have a 156 WRC plus and a 905 OPS in June in 48 at-bats. So not the biggest sample, but, you know, when he came back from that shoulder injury, that was probably a pretty clear explanation for the dreadful April and May. He was really, really good. Unfortunately, you know, he hurt the hamstring, then was hit on the wrist in the rehab assignment. And there was some scary stuff there with that. It was like he had, you know, something came up on the MRI from just being hit on the wrist, but, you know, he only was delayed like a day or two. But, you know, it's still worth it, I think, to see if he could bounce back to that June performance, right, where he was sort of that Tyler O'Neill that we were hoping for. You know, in that small 48 at-bat sample, he had two homers, three steals, and was hitting .354. So he was very much having a 2021 Tyler O'Neill-type month before that injury happened. So with that schedule, I think it's worth it to see if, you know, the wrist is okay, the shoulder's okay, he could feast on some of these matchups. Carlson, you know, I see him in basically every league that I have, like, on and off the wire. And, like, I think, you know, if you add him at the right time here, you might get lucky and hold on to someone that has a lot of good matchups and is seeing some of those skills improve as we go on in the year. You know, he's starting to hit more fly balls. He was on our barrel raiser list from Q1 to Q2. You know, it doesn't look great on the year at just 4.8%, but it's been a lot better in the past month, like 7-8%. So Carlson, I think, is a savvy, you know, cheaper acquisition probably than Tyler O'Neill. And I think a lot of these Cardinals are going to have pretty good second halves.
Yeah, and it might be something for roto leagues, especially if anybody kind of gives up on a Carlson, or if, you know, Lars Nootbaar goes on a tear like he has done in the past. Just knowing in roto leagues that the Cardinals end with six games against the Pirates. So
yeah, if your head-to-head matchups go to the end of the year, that's a great team to stack up on.
Yeah, definitely. Man, that rounds us out, Steve. A little bit shorter of a show, but you know, targeted on some matchups. I think it'll be really interesting, not only the names we talked about, but just in general, if we see, you know, the Eloy Jimenez or like the Giolito, some of the White Sox, a team that just seems plagued this season, if this strength of schedule is going to basically pay dividends in fantasy, will be interesting to keep an eye on it so that we can continue to evaluate if this is, you know, how much stock we want to put in this for next season, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, this is the process, right? Like, you know, the results aren't always going to follow, but, you know, in the long run, like, if you stick with this, like, you're going to be better off than not following this sort of stuff. So, like you said in the beginning of the show, you know, it comes with the caveat, like, that's baseball. That's why this game is fun. That's why fantasy baseball is fun. Like, you know, the Pirates could beat the Astros 3 out of 4 or something like that. But, you know, that's baseball, Susan. But in the long run, you're going to win out if you pay attention to this sort of stuff, and you're going to have a leg up on your league mates overall. I think there's some really, really good actionable stuff actionable stuff here, and you know, some nice players to target and to keep in mind for both head-to-head and for roto leagues in the stretch run.
Love it. Well, that's episode 65, guys. We made it through All-Star break. Good luck on the elongated weeks on head-to-head. Be sure to tune in to On the Wire on Sunday as well, Pitcherless Podcast Network, for your fab bids now that we're kind of in that home stretch. And yeah, man, this is it. We'll be here next Thursday, every Thursday through the rest of the season. And Steve, I'm sure we'll be getting into crunch time on all of our playoff pushes and industry leagues and all that good stuff. But had a blast, man. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.
Cannot wait for the second half. Thanks for listening, guys.